is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, September 26, 2019. A Buster only. Back in Bristol is Troy Farkas. We got a ton to get to today. We're going to hear from a guy who just got sprayed by champagne, Adam Eaton. Troy, have you ever had that experience, getting sprayed by champagne?
I have not. I've never won anything of any significance.
Okay, I've been sprayed by champagne a whole lot, and I've got one awful story about it, and we'll talk about that coming up with Keith. Last night, the White Sox and the Indians, of course, in the American League wildcard chase. Shane Bieber was on the mound. It didn't go well. In the bottom of the seventh inning, the White Sox put it away.
2-2, driven in the air. Into left field. Back it up on Luplo. He'll check to the track, to the wall, and this one is gone. It just sailed out of here and kept on going. And Wellington Castillo knocks out a three-run homer, and it is now an 8-3 White Sox lead.
That from WGN. Now, earlier in the day, the Minnesota Twins had won, leaving their magic number for clinching the American League Central at 1. Now with the Indians on the verge of a loss, this is what happened.
Swing and a miss. Lindor chased one down, and the ball game's over. The final tonight, the White Sox beat the Indians 8-3, and congratulations to the Minnesota Twins. They have their first Central Division championship since 2010.
Tom Hamilton, WATAM 1100, in that Twins game against the Tigers earlier. The Twins had taken the lead in the top of the seventh.
Swings and hammers deep to right. Back it goes, deep it goes, and gone. One swing of the bat, the Twins take the lead. A two-run homer from Luis Arraez to right. It's a 2-1 game, nobody out in the seventh.
Corey Provis on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Minnesota would go on and win that game 5-1. And in the champagne celebration afterward, Nelson Cruz talked about the year.
Yeah, definitely special. And I don't think every time you go, it got something, you know, because it's such a long season, so we have to go through so many adversity. I mean, it's no one guy or 25 guys. It takes the whole organization to bring it in. And the guys who got brought up from the minors, the trade and everything, all the pieces together to have what we got right now. So definitely, congrats to everybody. And Minnesota Twins fans, congrats to you too.
That from Fox Sports North. The Rays started the day a half game ahead of the Indians in the race for the second wild card in the American League. They face the Yankees, and Charlie Morton, the guy who would pitch the wild card game if the Rays get to that place, flirted with a no-hitter, throwing great against the Yankees. But before that, Brandon Lau and the Rays had a good first inning.
That's a liner into right. That will get a run home. 2-0 Rays. Meadows crossing the plate. Choi advancing to second. Brandon Lau driving in his 51st run.
Dwayne Statz on the Rays television network. And so the Rays were in a position to win this game in the top of the ninth.
The pitch on its way. Strike three called. Game over. The Rays have swept the Yankees. Rays win. Rays win. Rays win. Andrew Kittredge finishes it off. Charlie Morton started it. The Rays pitchers combine on a one-hit shutout and pick up their 95th win of the season. Rays beat the Yankees today by a score of 4-0.
Dave Wills, 620 WDAE, and by the end of the night, that meant that the Rays were a game and a half ahead of the Cleveland Indians, with perhaps a chance to catch the Oakland Athletics, who faced the Angels. And in fact, the A's were losing 2-1, top of the ninth inning. Matt Chapman at the plate.
He checks, turns, and Chapman hits a deep drive into center. Going back is Goodwin. He will turn and watch it fly! And the A's have taken the lead on the biggest home run of the year for the Oakland A's. Center field shot by Matt Chapman. 3-2 A's in the ninth.
Yeah, that's a pretty high standard. Kid Korak, 860 AM, the answer, has been watching the A's all year, and he says that's the biggest home run of the year. Because, of course, at that moment, Oakland maintaining its lead over Tampa Bay for the number one spot in the wild card race. That sets up today a must-win game for the Indians against the Chicago White Sox. They cannot fall any further behind. The Diamondbacks and the Cardinals played that really long game. on Tuesday. On Wednesday, bottom of the sixth inning, this happened.
And a drive to left field, hit it pretty well. Back of the warning track, at the wall, it's gone! Two-run homer off the bat of Wilmer Flores. And the Diamondbacks now lead it by a score of 9-5.
That was Greg Schulte, Arizona Sports 98.7 FM. The Diamondbacks would go on to beat the Cardinals 9-7. And that matters a little bit in the National League Central race because you know what? The Brewers, not only are they in a great position, they went into Wednesday in a great position to clinch a wild card spot, they're still in play in the National League Central. In the top of the first inning of the Brewers game against the Rays, Ryan Braun came to the plate with the bases loaded.
The stretch, here it is. Braun sends one in the air to right center and deep. Way back. Get up. Get out of here. Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit one out of here with the bases loaded. And the Brewers have the lead at 4-0.
Bob Uecker, 620 WTMJ. The Brewers just keep on winning without Christian Yelich. Now, this last month has been ugly for the Reds, but their third baseman, Eugenio Suarez, has been hitting milestones, and he got another one on Wednesday night.
Here's a windup in the pitch, and here's a rocket back into deep left field. Did he get it all? He did! Home run! How about that? A line drive that hit off the facing of the upper deck and left. And that's number 49. And that record we were talking about a moment ago now belongs to Eugenio Suarez.
So you said he's swinging for the fences and he ran into one there. Good for him.
He sure did.
That was Marty Brenneman on the Reds television network. In the bottom of the ninth inning, the Brewers with a chance to clinch a postseason berth.
Junior Guerra deals again. Bouncer hit right side and there's Spangenberg. And this one is over. And the crew going to celebrate here in Cincinnati. They're going to the postseason. Here's where the most injuries occur, during the postgame celebrations. And they're doing that now out at second base. Here comes the bullpen to join the celebration. And the Brewers are going to the postseason again for sure. And we will play again tomorrow, but for tonight, it's celebration time.
A remarkable run by the Milwaukee Brewers. They are going to play baseball in October. Craig Counsell, the Brewers manager, spoke with Fox Sports Wisconsin while drenched.
Well, there's no question we were tested. I mean, we lost our best player. We lost the MVP, the two-time MVP, what should be. And that tests your depth incredibly. But as much as anything, our pitching stepped up in just an absolutely huge way. And they shared the innings. They shared the load. They sacrificed for each other. They bailed each other out. And it was our pitching that got us through this last this stretch since post-Christian, really.
Now, the Nationals would beat the Phillies 5-2. Washington has played well. The Phillies absolutely collapsing at the end of the year. But Brad Miller had a titanic home run in the Phillies' loss.
As Brad Miller drills the first pitch deep down the right field side, it is going, it is gone into the top deck at Nationals Park. Unloading is Brad Miller, his 11th of the year. A titanic blast from the Phillies' left fielder, 2-1 Philadelphia.
Roxy Bernstein on ESPN Radio. Washington now leads the Brewers by one game in the standings. Milwaukee actually owns the tiebreaker between those two teams. So for the Nationals to win home field advantage in the wild card game, they have to stay ahead of the Brewers. The Pirates and the Cubs. The Cubs on the verge of elimination. Bottom of the eighth inning, the score was tied.
There it is. And it gets to the backstop again. Caro's back toward the mound. And Osuna will score. On back-to-back wild pitches, the Pirates take the lead 3-2.
That from Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. Yeah, so the Cubs limp out of the race. Back-to-back wild pitches. They lose 4-2.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day was in Seattle. The Astros going for the number one record in all of baseball, facing the Mariners at the end of an ugly season. And through the years, a lot of no-hitters have been thrown in Seattle, and it looked like Zach Greinke had a shot at one, bottom of the eighth inning.
The windup and the pitch. Slow curve, strike three. Seager goes down on a 64-mile-per-hour slow curveball.
Yeah, that's Steve Sparks, KBME 790 AM. In the top of the ninth inning with Houston leading 2-0, a rookie padded on.
3-2. And that's hammered deep to center. Lewis is back at the wall. He leaps and it's gone. Kyle Tucker to center field. And the Astros lead is 3-0. Number three for Tucker.
And the no-hitter, of course, intact going into the bottom of the ninth inning. And then this happened.
Now the 3-2. Curveball, and that's lifted in the left center field. Racing out. Mariznick dives. Can't get it. Mariners avoid getting no hit. With one out in the bottom of the ninth, Austin Nola, a pinch hit single.
But Zach Greinke, at that point, comes out of the game. He is the number three starter for the Astros. They got Verlander. They got Cole. And they got Zach Greinke, who was outstanding last night. A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, talked about Greinke's outing.
Making his pitches and getting quick outs. I mean, I think all of us thought he was going to get it at the end, the way he was going about it. Had plenty left in the tank. A guy that doesn't even start comes in and gets the hit. So that's the only unfortunate part of the entire night, but he was just tremendous.
And the Astros now in a commanding position for the number one seed in baseball throughout the postseason. We got a lot to get to today, but before we lead off with Keith Law, in baseball, there's a lot of tough decisions to make, like which pitch to throw in a 3-2 count, whether you should bunt or steal to get a runner into scoring position, and of course, ketchup or mustard. The folks at TD Ameritrade know just how crucial these decisions can be. That's why when you invest with them, they offer experienced associates that are always just a phone call away whenever you're stuck in a rut. Have a question about a trade? Don't feel 100%? Before you step to the plate, have a conversation with a TD Ameritrade trade desk and get a strategy gut check. Not only will someone walk you through your trade to help you decide if you're on the right path, but you'll always take away valuable info for your next at bat. The trade desk is like a clutch player that you can always depend on. Whether that means hitting a double or just moving you over with a bunt, they can make a difference, big or small, for your next move. Visit tdameritrade.com/baseballtonight to learn more about your newest investing teammate. That's tdameritrade.com/baseballtonight to get started.
It's more than just a conversation. It's the Weekly Dish with Keith Law and Bias Cat on Baseball Tonight.
Keith Law, of course, scouts for ESPN. He writes for ESPN. And Keith, I was thinking about this today because you've been in baseball a long time. And a lot of folks who work in front offices have not participated in champagne celebration. In fact, they hate it. One general manager said to me recently when I asked him, I said, hey, you going to go down there and get doused when your team's going into the postseason? He goes, hell no. Like, I'm going to wait till it all clears out. I don't want any part of that. Have you ever been in the middle of a champagne celebration, or do you have any desire to be in one?
So I was in – when I worked for the Jays, our AA club in New Hampshire won the Eastern League Championship. And I was at the game – I was, like, sort of the front office representative at the game just so there was somebody there. I mean, I lived an hour away, so it was easy. And so I went into the clubhouse. And when I realized what was going on, I was like, I sort of glued myself to the wall to just be clear of all. One, I mean, part of it was like, this is their celebration, not really mine. But also, I did not want to get doused in champagne. So I was there. I witnessed it. That was great. I was super happy for them. I left dry, and that was fine.
The worst that I ever got one, and I, you know, was we get to this time of year, I pack an A suit and a B suit. The A suit for the days when there's no chance I'm ever going to be doused in champagne. The B suit for when I know I'm probably am going right. to be. When I was covering the Astros' wild card win over the Yankees a few years ago, I went in there and the Astros are going crazy. And so I knew I was going to get sprayed. But Carlos Correa saw me and he was like, you're too dry. And he just dumped an entire bottle of champagne over me. And the game was at Yankee Stadium, and I live in the New York area, and I'm like, oh, my God, as I'm getting into my car.
Right.
And I'm trying to drive home. I smell so bad from champagne, and I'm just imagining in my 35-mile right. drive home, if I get stopped by a cop and right. I roll down the window, the smell that he's going that's going to hit him and how – you know, the story would sound like it's coming from a drunk. Right. Just came back from Yankee Stadium, and the Astros, they were really happy, and they were spraying with me with champagne. The guy, I would have been sentenced to like a 5-year prison sentence even before the guy got done, right?
Right. He would have been like, sure you did, pal.
Oh, man. But I got home, and it was okay, and I lived and learned from that because they say, you know, I always pack the extra suit. Yep. After my experience with Carlos. Okay, yesterday the Milwaukee Brewers got the spray champagne. What a finish to their season after the loss of Christian Yelich. They responded. They're going to be playing October baseball. Here's Yelich after the game with Fox Sports Wisconsin talking about his teammates.
I definitely wanted to be a part of it, and these guys have done such a great job all year that such a well-deserved moment for everybody in the organization, and so many people put in so much time and so much hard work for us to get to this point, and to do it back-to-back years is it's really hard to do, so you got to enjoy them when you can. I bet you a lot of people wrote us off, thought we couldn't do it for numerous reasons, but like I said, we believe the talent in this room, the kind of guys we have, and just the culture that we've built and continue to build here. You guys are really proud of all these guys, and they've done an incredible job, especially going on the run that we have in September.
So, Keith, most of the time when I hear people talk about culture in the room, I kind of roll my eyes, generally speaking. It's usually about, you know, whether the team's winning or losing. I do think that there are teams where they do have a good culture, a productive culture. And the Brewers are one of those teams. You sense that when you're around them. It always seems like they have a lot of fun, and they certainly respond well in September. As Paul Imbecchiti sent us these great notes this morning that over the last two seasons, the Brewers' run differential in the first 5 months of the last 2 years, minus 17. In September, the last 2 years, plus 119. And it does feel like that Craig Counsell and the way that he manages, you know, because they never have as much pitching as the Cubs. Or never as many resources as the Dodgers, but they kind of hang in there, and then in key spots, they put together enough pitching to win. And I think you give a lot of credit to Craig Counsell. I think you give a lot of the players for creating that sort of culture. You buying or are you rolling your eyes?
No, I would probably pin it on some more tangible things than just culture. Like, I think Craig Counsell is probably one of the better examples of a manager who's been able to learn on the job. Like, when he first got the job, he had no experience. And I would say his first year, maybe his first 2 years or so, it showed. I did not think he was a particularly good tactical manager. Some of that may also have been they didn't have the ideal personnel for that. But still, I thought he looked like a rookie manager, and it probably wouldn't end well. And then with the changeover in the front office there, if you talk to front office people there too, they will say very good things about Counsell, about his willingness to change the way he did things, about his willingness to work with the R&D department. They did give him better players, and he's become a better manager. I think he's particularly become a much better manager of bullpens. He's been willing to manage his pitching staff in kind of a very modern way for a guy who, you know, we had no reason to think he was going to be like that. I mean, that's I think a huge part of their success the last couple of years has been they built really good bullpens. Josh Hader obviously being a huge part of that, but it's not just him. I think their bullpens in general have been good, even as they change some personnel. And most of that goes to the pitchers, but I think you put a lot of that on Counsell too, on being willing to rethink how he uses relievers, being willing to work with the front office in terms of how he deploys those players. And I think that there's no way they're in this situation if Counsell had remained to the manager that he was, just in terms of on-field stuff, if he'd remained the manager that he was in his first year or two at the helm. And I can be very critical of managers who don't change. So I think I feel like it's almost important for me to point to, hey, no, here's a guy who did learn on the job. He didn't have to get fired, go somewhere else, and then learn his lesson. He learned while still in the same position. I think it's tremendous. I think it's a great example for, you know, potentially for other young managers who get major league jobs with little experience to look and see, nope, this is the exemplar of how to change your way of thinking and work with an advanced front office.
Yeah, and the Brewers, you know, they're going to be in the postseason. They do still have a chance to win the National League Central. They start the day one game behind the Cardinals in the loss column, a game and a half behind, and the Cardinals own the tiebreaker. So in order to pass the Cardinals, the Brewers would have to win three of four if the Cardinals win no more games. And if the Cardinals win one game, the Brewers would have to win four of their last four games. So in all likelihood, the Brewers are going to wind up being in the wild card spot. Again, the Nationals one game ahead of Milwaukee for the number one wild card spot, but the Nationals own that tiebreaker. So we'll see how that, or excuse me, Milwaukee owns the tiebreaker. So Washington has to stay ahead of Milwaukee. You've been following the American League wild card race after the events of yesterday, the comeback win by the Athletics, the great pitching performance by Charlie Morton, and the Indians losing with Shane Bieber on the mound. I mean, let's face it, from now forward, for the Indians, it's must win. They have to beat the White Sox today. Yes?
Yes. They can, I would say, I mean, they're probably not going to miss the playoffs anyway. But yeah, but they're certainly in the can't lose portion of the season.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, they have to win out, and especially when you play a team like the White Sox. I will say this, when we talked to Terry Francona over the weekend before our Sunday night game, he mentioned that he was, you know, kind of rooting for the Nationals to clinch early because they play the Nationals this weekend. Washington's perspective, you know, if you're Cleveland, you're hoping where these games are not that meaningful to Washington. And there's some meaning to them, home field and the wild card, but I don't see Dave Martinez extending, you know, tired regulars in order to do that. I don't see him pushing his starting pitchers in order to do that either.
You know, well, also, don't, if you're Martinez too, aren't you thinking, somebody asked me this in my, I did a Periscope video chat the other day and essentially asked, what do you do with, if you're the Nationals, do you have all of your big three starters available for the wild card game? You could look at that a couple of ways. Like, do you go into the game planning to use all three guys? I said no to that. But you'd like to go into that game and have them all available. You have to win, right? Especially if you're the Nationals. God, they need a win even in just a wild card game. So I'm thinking you want to go into that game with Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin all completely rested and available. And if that means trying to give them all the weekend off, or maybe just give them sort of a short start over the weekend, that's how you approach it. And that obviously would work in Cleveland's favor. Although even looking at this, by the way, it's amazing that Cleveland could, in theory, win 97 games and miss the playoffs. But
that's
amazing. I just think the odds are very much against them. I think there's going to be a lot of second guessing in Cleveland this offseason about their decision, and I think maybe ownership's decision not to spend money on the club last offseason.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do this offseason, too. They have a big whenever their season ends after that, you know, there'll be a lot of conversation in the front office about what to do with Corey Kluber.
Yep.
They hold a $17.5 million option on him. He made only seven starts this year. It was ugly. You know, he's going to be, what, 34 years old next year. And on, you know, so on one side, you're like, boy, the performance, you've seen some erosion. And on the other hand, a one-year obligation is not that big of a deal for most teams. For Cleveland, with the resources they have, maybe it is going to be. So it'll be an interesting decision there. And also a lot of interesting decisions coming up for the Philadelphia Phillies. I love to do this, putting you in the position of leadership. And in this case, with the Phillies, I wouldn't say Matt Klentak, the general manager. I say John Middleton, the principal owner, because he's the guy who, when he wants to, he'll step in and he'll make decisions. The pursuit of Bryce Harper over Manny Machado, he led that. The decision in season to fire the hitting coach and to put Charlie Manuel in as the hitting coach, he led that decision. From everything I hear, Matt Klentak is absolutely fine with Gabe Kapler. They have a good working relationship. Kapler's got 1 year left on his deal. On the other hand, talk radio, your fan base, they are braying for change. And we've now seen two straight Septembers that the Phillies have absolutely collapsed. I can't believe it, but the Phillies' record now is down to 500.
Yeah.
And so if you're John Middleton, tell me what you're doing.
So first thing, just to get it out of the way, you keep Gabe Kapler. I think Gabe's actually a very good tactical manager. He's really shown himself. I know that, you know, there are Phillies fans who'll point to one or two games where he's maybe not handled the bullpen ideally, but I really think, you know, you don't want to judge a manager just off one or two games. I think over the course of 162 games, he's shown himself to be a pretty good tactical manager. And I've heard that. That's not just my opinion. I've heard that from other executives with other National League clubs, because obviously Kapler's job security is kind of a topic right now. And they've all said, you know, he may not be maybe the best with the media necessarily. And, you know, if you're not in that clubhouse, you don't necessarily know how his relationships with players are. But just talking about him as a tactical manager, he's good. And I certainly don't think he's the problem. I think the problem with the Phillies this year was the pitching staff, the bullpen. They spent money to assemble a bullpen, and almost the entire opening day bullpen got hurt, like to the point where most of those guys were unavailable / ineffective for the bulk of the season. I can't really pin that on anyone. It's just that was just sort of the worst luck. If you want to pin anything on their offseason decision making, they did go out and spend a lot of money. They probably needed to do more to address the rotation. If I'm John Middleton, I'm saying this offseason, what do we do to address the starting rotation for 2020 so that we maximize our chances to earn a playoff spot? Obviously, Gerrit Cole is the big name. You and I have talked about him a bunch. I don't know, we need to rehash that because the whole world's going to be after Gerrit Cole. So I think you have to, if you're John Middleton, you go to your baseball ops people and say, all right, we can go hard after Gerrit Cole. If we don't get him, what is plan B? If we miss on plan A, and that's Cole, we cannot miss on plan B. Is it other free agents? Is it going after Zach Wheeler? Are we trading what's left in the farm system for another starter, maybe for two starters? Because you may have to turn the page on guys like Nick Pivetta. You may have to answer, you know, make a go or no-go decision on Zach Eflin as a starter going forward. To me, all the questions around this team are around the pitching staff. And I do think, given all the investments they've made and what they've done with the farm system, it makes far more sense at this point to continue to push. I still don't think they're that far away from being playoff caliber if they add to the starting rotation. And realistically, they're one of the few teams with the money to do so, to go out and you know, reacquire two-fifths of a championship starting rotation this offseason.
So you are at you as John Middleton, you are keeping Gabe Kapler. If
yes,
John Middleton were to fire Gabe Kapler, which of the managers that potentially are out there interest you? Because I can tell you, I mean, there's a ton of speculation about Joe Maddon,
yes,
the Pennsylvania product, the guy from Hazleton who's had success in the past. There's a lot of speculation about Joe Girardi, Mike Socia, another Pennsylvania guy potentially could be available, and then Buck Showalter, our old friend from Baseball Tonight, who, of course, worked for the Baltimore Orioles under Andy McPhail, the team president, yep, of the Philadelphia Phillies. Of those four, or perhaps somebody else you have in mind, who interests you?
Assuming that they're going to go for someone with experience and not, since Gabe was a rookie manager, rookie major league manager, he had minor league managing experience. If they were going to go for someone with experience, I'd say Girardi and Maddon of those four, you could go either way. Different personalities. Girardi, probably the better in-game tactical manager of the two. Maddon, the better clubhouse guy. If you think that was an issue, and I'm not saying it was or is with Gabe Kapler, you will hear that, but I find it's very sort of secondhand, and players who've left maybe don't like Gabe as much. But if you're in, you know, Klentak et al., they know. They'll know whether or not that was a real problem. And if they chose to go in another direction, maybe they say, all right, we're going to go the kind of do a 180 from Kapler's personality and go for someone like Maddon. I think the flip side is Maddon sort of over the last couple of years has shown he's not a great tactical manager. And I do think you'd be giving something up going from Kapler to Maddon in terms of just the benefit of a good tactical manager. If that's your bigger concern, then you go with Girardi, where I think it was kind of never really an issue with him with the Yankees. You know, he was certainly above average in terms of what he added to the team by how he managed personnel in games. I think either of those guys would be a good choice. With Socia, he did not evolve over the course of his tenure with the Angels. Now, maybe it'd be a fresh start, been away for a year. Maybe he'd rethink. I'd like to see a lot more evidence of that before handing him a team and saying, take this club to the playoffs. I'd like to know that he's different, particularly because his reputation with the Angels was that he did not work with the analytics guys. He would almost refuse to use some of the fairly basic advanced scouting reports that they were getting from R&D. If you're not going to do that, you can't manage my ball club. I don't own a ball club, but I'm going to say hypothetically, you cannot be my manager if you can't work with the R&D department.
Yeah, and for the record, if I had to bet the family farm back in Vermont one way or the other, I think they're going to fire him because I think they will listen to talk radio and I think they will listen to their fan base. Bias Cat checking in, but we got,
yes,
before you address his issues, I got two 30-second questions for you. One, King Felix Hernandez makes his last start for the Mariners today against the Oakland Athletics. If his career ends now, is he a Hall of Famer in your eyes?
I think so. I think he's going to have a little bit of a tough time getting in. I think Roy Halladay getting in is going to help a lot of these modern starters with sort of lower innings totals, lower just career bulk totals. I'm not sure if I'd vote for Felix. He had the peak. He didn't have the longevity. But I think as some of these other contemporary starters get in, we're going to sort of drop the bar a little bit for starting pitchers because we have to. Otherwise, we'd never put a starting pitcher in. He'd be behind guys like Sabathia. He'd be behind someone like Greinke for me. But maybe a few of those guys get in, and then we can talk about Felix comparing well to other contemporary starters who've gotten in.
Yeah, Sabathia career adjusted ERA plus is at 116. King Felix 118. Mm-hmm. Career WAR. Felix is way down the list. I totally agree with your analysis there. I think it's going to take him some time to get in. And before you go, you just had a column posted on ESPN.com with your major award winners. Who do you have American League MVP? Because that's a topic of conversation. Mike Trout was asked about it yesterday. He was very polite in complimenting Alex Bregman, and that's what it's coming down to, either Trout or Bregman. Where do you fall?
Yeah, it's Trout. For me, it's Trout. So Trout is almost the default option. He did have the better season. Bregman had a great season, and I sort of joked in the column, if you want to have a second award and say the best, the American League most valuable player not named Mike Trout, that's Alex Bregman. I'm not going to be upset if Bregman wins. This isn't like when Trout lost to Miguel Cabrera and Trout was worth something like three wins more over the course of the season. Bregman's a great player. He's having a great season. But the way I vote for the award, I say that's an individual award. I just look at what each individual player did, not at the standings, not at context. To me, Trout had the better season. I had Trout one. I had Bregman two.
All right, Keith, thanks for doing this. Bias Cat has something to talk to you about.
Yeah, he's got some opinions on Kapler, too. Well, he listens to talk radio when I'm not home.
The Washington Nationals clinched a playoff spot the other day. Despite an incredibly slow start to this year, they were 19-31. And Roxy Bernstein spoke with the Nationals' Adam Eaton.
First of all, congratulations. Just take us through the day yesterday. What was it like for you?
It was a long day. everyone was here, bright and early. Longest day where I think we're the clubhouse guys, getting here at 8 a.m. But it was a day that, we knew that a lot of things had to fall into place correctly in order to clinch. And not that we weren't expecting to win two games, but it's very hard to, take two games from a very good team on the opposing end, setting out to do so. But and it worked out. Pittsburgh won as well. So it was a fun day. Whenever you win two ball games in any way, shape, or form, it's great. And I think that was just kind of our focus, is to win two games. And if, the Cubs lost, and, icing on the cake. So it was kind of neat there in the ninth inning. It was like pitch for pitch, realistically. I don't really watch too many scoreboards, but it was neat to be able to look over my right shoulder. And we'd get an out, and I'd look back, and then they'd get an out. And then I'd look, and seriously, it was basically right on time. They had one walk. I think that was the only thing that was different in the innings than us. And to be able to celebrate with the team that they struggled so early and really came together as a team to be able to, celebrate is something special for me. There's a lot of good veterans in this clubhouse. There's a lot of young guys in this clubhouse, and to be able to share a moment with them was special.
What was it like being on the field there right after you guys won and then watching the completion of the Cubs and the Pirates game up there in the big screen and seeing that you'd clinch the playoff spot?
You know what's funny is I didn't stick around. Tony, me, and some of the older guys, we ran down in here because – well, number one, us watching isn't going to change anything. They'll let us know what happens. And we just ran up here and we tried to get prepared as possible and get settled in because, it's funny. All my hockey friends called me like, did you win the World Series? I didn't know it was so soon. Like, why are you spraying champagne? I was like, boys, you don't understand. Like, it's a long season. And to be able to let loose and enjoy some of the success of the season is special for us. So, like I said, we ran up here and got all geared up and, had a moment with each other before everyone came storming in, and it was good.
You alluded to this, Adam, before about where this team was and where you've come from. May 23rd, this team is 12 games under through 50 games. What changed? What turned in this clubhouse to get you guys into the postseason?
That's the thing I feel like a lot of people ask is, like, what changed, what turned? I don't think anything changed or turned. It was just, baseball is. Baseball is such a weird, very finicky game that either things are going your way, things aren't going your way, or whatever it may be. But what helped us turn it, or what helped us stay the course, would be our veteran leadership. I think we're
one of the older teams in the big leagues. We have a lot of guys that have been there and done that, been to the playoffs, been in the World Series winners. I think that for us has held a lot of positive energy, a lot of just overall good vibes. When we're not playing all that well, you know, the saying is you can only suck for so long, boys. Don't worry about it. You know, go back out there. Enjoy one another. Things are going to turn around. And if you believe it as a veteran club, and you do, because you know you guys have some really good names in here, and you convince the young guys that that's going to happen. Like I said, good things are happening, and you kind of, you know, have the fruit of the labor. So it's a unique season that, like I said, I don't think anybody's going to forget.
Well, congratulations. There's still a lot more work to be done. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Numbers game.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you're joining us today playing hurt.
Yeah, you know, it is not the time of year for a cold, but apparently the cold is not aware of the fact that it is the last week of baseball season. So trying to rest up and, you know, do what I can before games start each day. And, you know, we'll be good. I'll be fine by next week.
Yeah, just the way it always goes for baseball writers in the past has been you just grind through October and then you get home and then you're sick for like a week.
Yes.
Yes. Jason Stark and I have had a lot of conversations about how the human body is amazing in that way. And it knows you can't get sick. Okay, now you can collapse. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is two. So the Twins clinched their playoff berth last night, winning, then waiting on the White Sox to beat the Indians, which they did. It was also manager Rocco Baldelli's 38th birthday. So this is where we get the number two. They're the second team in MLB history to clinch a postseason berth on their manager's birthday. The other was the Cardinals in 2013 on Mike Matheny's birthday when he turned 43. And you guys know I'm a big fan of birthdays. So when I saw that it was Rocco Baldelli's birthday, I absolutely had to call Elias and figure out if we could come up with a note with this. And you know, it's a bit of a theme because last year the Red Sox clinched the pennant on Alex Cora's birthday, and they were the first team to clinch a pennant on their manager's birthday. So some really lucky birthdays these days.
Number two
is three. So Zach Greinke got close to a no-hitter last night, which would have been the first of his career. It also would have been the third of the season for the Astros, which would have been a record. But instead, still, we've yet to see a team throw three no-hitters in a season. And this works on the being no-hit side, too, because the Mariners would have been no-hit for the third time this year, which also would have been a record. And, you know, the thing I kept thinking about last night was they kept showing Gerrit Cole in the dugout throughout the game as Greinke was working on this bid. And I just couldn't help but think that, you know, Verlander has a no-hitter. Greinke got really close last night. And we've got Gerrit Cole going on the last day of the season against the Angels in Anaheim. I find it hard to believe that he's not going to be extra amped up for that one.
Number one
is 13.6. So that's the Indians' playoff odds right now, 13.6%. They were at 43.9% entering yesterday. But after their loss and the Twins clinch and the A's and the Rays both winning, they've dropped all the way to 13.6%, which is the lowest they've been all year. They were as high as 95% as recently as August 12th, about a month and a half ago. And by the way, they entered the season with 95% playoff odds. That's how much of a lock they were considered to be. Only the Yankees and Astros had higher playoff odds to start the year. And the magic number for both the A's and Rays right now to clinch a postseason berth and, you know, clinch a spot in that wild card game is three. So unfortunately, it feels like this could be decided pretty soon.
Yeah, I gotta say though, it's funny. I still look at the Indian season, even if they don't make the playoffs. First off, they're gonna wind up, if they don't make the playoffs, they'll probably have 95, 96 wins in not making the postseason. And I also feel like that it's been a good year for them because they battle. Like, we said on our production call last week that we give the Yankees a lot of credit working through injuries. The Indians have had the same thing. And they're a small market team, and so even if they don't make the postseason, to me it's been a positive year for them. What do you think?
Definitely, and I think you've seen the emergence of some really, really outstanding players for them. Yeah. I think Shane Bieber has really shown what he can do. We've seen Mike Clevenger, you know, he was hurt for a bit, but we've seen him maybe prove that he could take on that spot, you know, with Corey Kluber out, you know, of being the ace. And even guys like Oscar Mercado, it just feels like they've had a lot of young players show what the future can be. And it definitely feels like, you know, it's disappointing to miss out, but based on how a lot of their roster looked, even in June, you know, no one would have expected them to make the playoffs. So even coming this close is definitely something to be proud of.
Yeah, 100%. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
It's time for some inside heat on Baseball Tonight.
Mandy Bell covers the Cleveland Indians for MLB.com. And, Mandy, it seems pretty clear as you and I talked today, the Indians running third for the American League wild card spots. They are now a game and a half behind the Tampa Bay Rays for the second spot. They play the Chicago White Sox today, and it feels absolutely must win. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everyone has said every game is a must win right now. And you could tell the vibe in the clubhouse after losing last night and losing 8-3. It's just everyone was just deflated after that loss. And they all say the same thing. We need to win every single game. And every question that was, do you feel like every game is a must win right now? Do you feel like you have to win out to even have a chance? And Francisco Lindor first said, I felt like that the last 2 weeks. So it's an absolute must win today. I mean, Tampa's off, so they pick up that half of a game if they do win today. And it's just the entire team understands what's at stake, and they all know that they basically have to win out to try to squeeze their way into a postseason chance, whether it's a tiebreaker or whatever it comes down to.
You know, it's really weird because they're hanging in this race by their fingernails, and yet I feel like if they get through this, if they're in the wild card game, they would be a dangerous team moving forward. Not to say, I mean, let's face it, the Astros are going to be the favorites to win the World Series. We begin the postseason, but they would be a dangerous team because it feels like as this year goes along and they get Jose Ramirez back, like they're gathering momentum.
Jose Ramirez was the biggest addition. I mean, no one really knew how he was going to be able to bounce back after missing an entire month of the season because of that fractured hamate bone in his hand. But less than 4 weeks-ish, right around that time after getting surgery, he comes back. He hits 2 home runs on 2 swings, his first 2 swings off the injured list, and then hits another home run last night. And he's just been everything that they could have imagined and more. I mean, no one ever expected this. Tito was saying last night after the game, I mean, he's a special kind of player to be able to have 3 home runs in 2 games off the injured list, missing a month. He's been everything that they've needed since June. I mean, he started off and he was one of the worst hitters in baseball to start off the year in the first 2 months. And he's really, really found his swing. And the Indians have said that all year long, saying, we know that he's struggling and we're never going to give up on him because whenever he does figure it out, he's going to come back and he's going to be atop the leaderboard in every single category from whenever he starts. And man, he's really come back. So yeah, I agree. I think they have a lot of momentum. It seems like they're having a lot of fun. Yasiel Puig brings a lot of energy into that clubhouse. He's always screaming and sprinting around the room and everyone's always laughing and giving him a hard time. And it just seems like they have a lot of fun. They have a lot of momentum. And it seems like they could be a dangerous team if they do sneak in for a wild card or something like that. But they just have to figure out a way to get there first.
So when I saw you in spring training at a Goodyear, I had a conversation with a longtime member of the organization who said that the big question for him was with Michael Brantley having moved on to the Houston Astros and some other guys having moved on, he was wondering, okay, somebody will need to emerge as a leader on this team. In your eyes, as someone who's covered the team all year, who has that person been?
Well, I think what's really cool about watching that is it's been a mixture of guys. I mean, there's no doubt with Francisco Lindor is someone who has stepped up tremendously. There's just absolutely no doubt. You talk to any player after a rough loss or a tough stretch like this, and they always say, well, Lindor called us all together. Lindor is telling us this. Lindor is telling us that. So there's absolutely no doubt that he's been someone who's stepped up. But I think what's special about the Indians is that they've had a number of guys step up into that role. You have Roberto Perez, who first time starting this year behind the plate, replacing Yan Gomes after he was traded in November, and he really has stepped up to become one of the bigger leaders on the team. I mean, not even just controlling his pitching staff, but it just seems like he's become just a player of guidance of some sort for the rest of the players on the team. You have a guy like Shane Bieber, who's had to step up this year just as a 24-year-old and has
second season in the big leagues after every other starter either was traded for like Trevor Bauer or was injured. Corey Kluber, Mike Clevenger was injured for 2 months, and then Carrasco obviously had his leukemia diagnosis, so he had to step up in an enormous way to leave guys like Zach Plesac and Aaron Civale. So it just seems like there's been a number of guys who really stepped up, but there's no hiding it that Francisco Lindor is one of the bigger voices in that room.
45 seconds left. Whenever the Indian season ends, the big question hanging over the team is, are they going to pick up the 2020 option of Corey Kluber? I think it's for $17.5 million. What's your insight on that?
It's a tough situation because they didn't get to see much of him this year. He's been out since May 1st. He almost came back in August, and then he had that oblique setback, and it doesn't look like he's going to be ready to go at any point throughout October. Maybe later in the year they said if they could make a run, but I mean they're in a tough situation. The vibes that I was at least getting that around the clubhouse and around just being around the organization, it seems like they will be picking that option up. But that's going to be a big decision to make. You have a lot of money on the line for a team that has one of the tighter budgets, and they don't have much wiggle room when it comes to that, especially when they're trying to help their offense and they're trying to figure out ways to better this team. But if I'm putting a guess out right now, I think they're going to be picking up that option.
All right, Mandy, thanks for doing this. Have fun the last few days.
Thanks so much, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster, some Bleacher Tweets for you on this Thursday morning. First one comes from our friend P.K. Steinberg, at P.K. Steinberg. The Brewers have been on a tear since Christian Yelich went out. Are they just stepping up to the plate, or are they really this good?
P.K., I think they're stepping up to the plate. And a tip of the cap to that, but Troy, I don't know how you feel. When I look at the potential playoff landscapes, there are two teams that I look at and I say, I can't see them getting all the way through October because of how they have to piece their pitching together on a daily basis. And we saw that with the Brewers last year where they wound up losing to the Dodgers because they were just outlasted in the end. They didn't have the pitching depth that the Dodgers did. I think the Brewers, while it's great they made the postseason, I can't see them winning the World Series, and I feel the same way about the Tampa Bay Rays. The other teams, I can paint a reasonable path in my mind. What do you think?
That's logical. And I know they've been so good this year. The Twins have been so good, but I don't know. I can't see them going that far. I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm sorry, Arena. Next one for Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit. Do you think the Astros will hold Garrett Cole out of game 162, which could possibly cost him the AL Cy Young, or will they let him pitch?
Yeah, this is what the conversation is going to be like. AJ Hinch's office. Come on in, Garrett. Have a seat. Garrett, what do you want to do? And that'll be the conversation. Do you want to pitch one inning? Do you want to pitch three innings? Do you want to pitch five innings? Whatever you want to do, AJ Hinch will defer to him. What do you think, Troy?
Okay. I don't know. I imagine he'll want to pitch. I mean, he's a gamer. He's going to want to pitch. You all want to win awards at the end of the day, so I think he'll want to do it. Next one comes from Carlos Munoz at Carlos Almighty. With Carlos Correa's size and constant back injury history, why don't the Astros move him to third base and let Alex Bregman take over at shortstop full-time?
Carlos, I don't think that's going to be a consideration, and I don't think playing third base will necessarily save Carlos from what he's dealing with. Because remember, third base is a step-and-a-dive position, which isn't going to necessarily help out with his back.
Yeah, I wouldn't say a move to the hot corner is necessarily an upgrade for that. Andres at Tufty QU. It seems Jeff Luhnow has quite the dilemma on his hands, and the postseason hasn't even started. Garrett Cole, George Springer, and Carlos Correa, figuring out who to keep and how to structure the payroll will be pretty wild for 2020. Can't we just keep them all?
Boy. I've talked about this where I just don't think the Astros are a team that historically pays retail. That's not what Jeff has done in his job, and we've talked about Garrett Cole's going to get a record-setting contract. Do you want to commit, if you're the Astros, a $230 million contract? Springer's a free agent after next year. My guess is that Cole signs elsewhere. Springer signs during this offseason before he reaches free agency next fall, and they will be in a wait-and-see mode on Carlos Correa because of the physical problems.
Hopefully.
A lot of Astros questions today.
I know. Well, hopefully Andres can get his fix for Garrett Cole if Cole agrees to stay in the same state with the Rangers. Last one from Eric E. at Esoteric Eric Zero. Looking back, which player do you think was the most impactful acquisition by a contender at the trade deadline?
Hard to beat the Rays acquisition of Nick Anderson, the right-handed reliever who was pitching an independent ball earlier in his professional career. 22 games with the Rays, 21 innings. He's faced 77 batters, and Troy, out of the 77 batters he's faced, 40 strikeouts since coming over from the Marlins. That's a pretty good trade.
That's pretty impressive. And another name out there, I know they're no longer a contender, but Nicholas Castellanos came over from Detroit,
yeah,
and he killed it for the Cubs in the second half. Thank you for the tweets.
Set himself up for free agency.
Yes, exactly. Welcome to Texas, Nick. Thank you for the tweets this morning. Use the hashtag Bleacher Tweets every day.
Man, he's going to be lobbying all fall for all these guys to sign with the Rangers. I hope you're not too disappointed. That's it for today. Let's run through. We got Keith Law today to thank. We got Manny Bell, Sarah Langs, Roxy Bernstein, Adam Eaton, and Troy Farkas, who does a great job, even though he's obnoxious about his Rangers. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.